Hello.
Sample data that we can use as we build out our metrics. Right now, the data we have is lacking a lot of data elements, so that, you know, what we'll see is just a lot of the metrics are either 100% or 0%. Next, we can just do a quick talk about the facility geozone hierarchy and how we plan to pull that from your API. Then we'll talk through how we'll determine facility-supported programs, and these are all discussions that are coming from GeoTickets. Then we'll go through what the product model looks like, specifically understanding the relationship between orderables, trade items, and commodity goods, commodity types. We'll then discuss the denominator for the closed vial wastage metric that Josh provided some feedback on. I just want to make sure that we're on the same page there with what we're building. And lastly, we'll talk about the full stock availability indicator and how we might handle the reporting granularity of, you know, merging requisition data with stock card data, where, you know, requisition data spans a large date range and stock card data doesn't. Does that sound good for everybody?
That looks great. Yeah, there's a lot of things.
Yeah. So without further ado, we'll just jump in here and look quickly at what we've got for Superset. Go ahead.
Does video have to drop in 30 minutes? Maybe we should do that first.
Okay, cool. So video, we wanted you to participate, particularly in our discussion of reporting granularity for the full stock availability indicator. I see that you updated this ticket just prior to our call. But basically what came up on the last call, we were trying to find a way to merge requisition data and stock data into a facility level table so that we could have the, we were assuming that we needed to report on this metric with a daily granularity, but it sounds like because requisition data spans a rather large day range, that's just not really feasible. So what we've proposed here in this ticket is having, and we discussed this on last call as well, is having one version of the metric, which is daily granularity, which uses stock card data only, and a second, which would have a broader granularity that would be a merge of requisition data and stock card data. Here what we've got is basically a requisition that spans January and ends in April, and stock cards from January, February, and April. We would merge each of those stock cards onto this requisition. And for requisition B, where it only has March to May, and we only have one there, you know, we would just merge stock card X to line items B. I went through this quickly because I know Vidya just read this this ticket. I guess does the group have questions about that? Vidya, I know your concern was that it might be redundant to even have version two, but it was my understanding that we wanted to definitely include requisition data for the full stock availability indicator. So I guess just looking for feedback from the group on this approach. Our power just went out here. Can you all still hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you fine.
Back yeah. Up is going well. Okay. So any questions on the logic here, or, you know, maybe we could talk about what the best way is to look at the full stock availability indicator with, you know, requisition data included in that broad date range it has.
Yeah. So I apologize if I don't have all of the context before I start with my comments, and maybe John and Major, if you're on, you can correct me if I get any of this wrong. But specific to full stock availability, the indicator itself, it's a pretty simple indicator in that it asks, was there on every day of for a facility between two resupply points, was there stock or was there no stock? So the start date and the end date needed, which is where sort of that connection to requisitions happens. But then in terms of the data point of was there stock or not, you could get that from daily stock card data if that's getting updated. So that's why I said just number one would be sufficient.
And Clay, by the way, I just had muted you while video was talking there. We had a little background echo, so maybe it would be good for all of us to just mute while other people are chatting.
So just to...
Oh, yeah, Clay, go ahead if you were unmuting there.
So Clay, do you catch that, or should we clarify or restate something? I think we are, I am okay, and I...
No.
Oh, we can't
okay.
There we hear you.
You can hear me now?
Yes.
Okay, sorry about that. I don't know what's happening. We just lost power here, but what I was asking was we spoke last call about whether we were going to connect the requisition the stock services, but it's not done yet. So it was my understanding that we needed to look at both sets of data. I guess looking to Josh or Mary Jo for some input there, if we could just rely on stock data.
Well, so maybe let's take a step back. You do need to look at both sets of data. I'm not sure you need to look at both at the same time, though. What I heard from you, Vidya, this morning was the requisition data is less important than the stock data for this indicator. Could you clarify a little bit what you mean by that?
So, the sort of like if stock data is updated as per policy, then that's the one that's more relevant to this particular indicator because it tells you what stock status is on a daily basis, that daily granularity that you have here. And that's what and that's the data point that then tells you was there full stock availability of a particular product between resupply dates. And so that's why I said the stock information is more important than the requisition information. However, what you need from requisition is what are the two resupply dates that you're looking at? And I assume you would get that from knowing when requisitions happened.
Okay, so to restate that, by policy, I think what we heard was that stocking data is more important than the requisition, you know, that one reporting field that's on the requisition. And so for this indicator, maybe we don't have to look at the requisition, that field. We should really be using this indicator for daily stock transactions, anything that's in stock management. Is that what you're saying? And you're clear on what stock management data is opposed to the requisition mm-hmm. data?
Yeah.
Okay.
And this is Brandon here. I like where this is headed too. It's almost like Clay, we could, in the ticket proposes that there be like two versions of the metric, one that uses two versions of the metric. And maybe instead of having a version of it that tries to merge these two data streams that are just so fundamentally different, we simply focus on having one version of our our indicator or our dashboard show us the metric based on stock data alone, and if we need to, another version of the indicator could show us the metric based on requisition data alone. If we still needed to have kind of two options of where the indicator comes from, but never try to merge the data together.
Yeah. I agree.
Okay, cool. I heard a note of resupply dates that we were talking about in terms of requisitions and stock. It sounded like the requisition data or the resupply date would be on the requisition data. Would the resupply date then, like if you have a resupply, the stock card would be updated as well. So we can kind of, we don't need to necessarily excerpt or extract the resupply dates from requisition data. Is that correct? Since it'll be on stock data?
Actually, the processing periods in our system are in the reference data. So right now we have a concept of a schedule for our requisition service, which is drawing upon the reference data to get that. What we have not yet designed or figured out for fulfillment service and that aspect is, are we using the same reference data processing period, which we call currently requisition periods, or no, we call them processing periods. We haven't designed or determined if that processing period is the same that a requisition service would use for a fulfillment service. So when she says resupply, she's referring to the fulfillment process. And so I think we could leave it alone for now, or if we need to know that processing period, you would use the dates defined in the reference data for a processing period. So you could say for the processing period defined in reference data, was looking at stock cards between those two dates, was there a stock out or a date where stock was zero?
Okay, great. So what we'll do, I'll update the JIRA ticket with this tomorrow morning, but what we'll do is we'll just focus on building a version of the indicator with stock data only. And if we find that that is insufficient, you know, we can look to build one out with requisition data only that we could compare the two side by side.
Sure. Another point I'd like to make is if, you know, if we have to provide a time period, then I would say the sort of rule of thumb to use, because we are using stock data, stock card data, is to then go with the monthly cycle as well. If the if we're, you know, if the stock card data gets updated every month, well, in this case, it gets updated every week, but if we wanted to give a time period of saying full stock availability is for X time period, and the default can be a month.
Great. Cool. Okay, any other thoughts on this sort of topic of the full stock availability indicator and the two separate data streams we have? Otherwise, we can go back and look at what we've got in Superset.
The only thing I would add to all of this is a meta addition is that this was combining these things was from Peter and I way back when, and we should have sooner so that we could have gotten the simplicity sooner rather than later. So next time video, we'll hopefully pull you in sooner if we can.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So I will move on and show us, let me just move this. I'll move on and we can look just quickly at what we've got here in Superset. Note that the metrics are not, you know, we're not going to see a bunch of pretty graphs. I'm just going to show you some of what we've got built into the back end. But here I'm just on our Druid Data Sources tab, and we have our stock card table. First, we'll take a look just at the columns that we've got built, and this is something that, you know, as we bring new indicators into this into scope and, you know, in subsequent months, you know, we would be able to just add columns that we needed here. This is by no means a fixed list. And then we've built a number of metrics in Druid off of those columns, and those are built using JSON queries. So we can just look at one here for closed vial wastage. You know, and we can, you know, we've got the basic structure of the queries built out using the columns that we've, you know, defined on that previous tab. Here I've got sort of a list of the queries that we've built for the full stock availability indicator and the closed vial wastage indicator. I will add these to our JIRA tickets as attachments, you know, following this call, so you can review those. We don't need to go through them in detail right now. And then, yeah, I'll just jump back and show you kind of what, you know, what we're going to be working with on this. So here, you know, we've got our data source and the visualization type of table. For the ease of simplicity, I'm just going to backdate this 700 days to make sure that we're catching the stock card data. And what I'll do here is just add the metrics we've built. You'll notice there's a couple for closed valve wastage, and that's just so we can see that, you know, that some of our calculations are working correctly on all. You'll see what I mean here in a second. So we've returned our values here. This is just with that one record that we had from the sample data you provided. We were able to load the data from your test server into a different database, but we needed to update the spec to have the columns that we just looked at. So that's something that we'll be able to do, you know, early tomorrow. But for now, we just have one stock card in here. And you can see that, you know, we have, this is showing that there were 90 units of closed vial wastage, and, you know, 90 out of 90 would have a ratio of 100. We modified the reasons to make this particular record qualify for closed vial wastage. With the actual definition, you know, it wasn't a qualifying reason, it'd be zero. And similarly, you know, we count the facilities with full stock availability, and we can put it as a rate. Again, you know, these numbers aren't the most robust, but we have the underlying business logic built out. So once we get some richer data, you know, these views will be more meaningful. So that, I think, unless if there are specific questions on what we just looked at, I think we can transition to talking about getting some better data. I know Peter had asked about what the likelihood of us getting you know, some production data or like some staging data from a live environment. I mean, I don't know if there are, you know, legal or other, you know, sort of compliance barriers to that, or if it's something that, you know, we would be able to have access to, because that would probably be the easiest.
Yeah, so I we've definitely heard that. And there's a whole bunch of issues, and maybe we're going to work those out. One question I've got for you is, if you want real data, I can see you wanting real data just to have rich data to go off of. Do you also want that data so that you can verify the accuracy of your metric?
Yeah, and I think to just make these showcases more beneficial, when we start to look at visualizations of the metrics, it'd be better if we could see them trended over time, grouping by a number of facilities, you know, where we have some stock adjustments that are receipts, some that are not, you know, so we can make sure that we're, you know, calculating the metrics, but also the way we're looking at the metrics so that our graphs are richer.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that makes a lot of sense. And so that you know where we're at, we don't have direct access to that production level data at this moment. And there would be some level of effort. We need to, you know, go through and look at that level of effort and see if it's worthwhile to going and getting that data. So it may not be a super quick. And so the other alternative is to create, you know, a data set where we know, you know, it could be quicker, but we also know this is how it will present. This is, would be checking our, you know, we would create a data set that would allow us to check our metrics against that. So I'm not sure if I'm asking, updating you on where we're at, but
sure. I definitely understand that there are, you know, probably some roadblocks getting production data, and I think, you know, if that is too much of an ordeal, I think having just some mocked up, you know, fake data would be fine. You know, as long as we're seeing some variation in the numbers. One idea that I had on that would be taking, and I'd be interested to hear your thoughts here. If this would be easier. Or really just more painstaking than just like creating a data set like you suggested. But basically taking the demo data that you pointed me to last night, I guess / yesterday morning, I don't know what time it was for you, but about 24 hours ago, where we would essentially, for each of the records, we would count the distinct values that we had for each field. So for example, if we had just one facility, we could say, okay, let's choose two or four arbitrary facilities that roll up to two different, you know, tier one geo zones, just so we get some sense of roll-ups there. Or if we look at quantity, let's say, and there's only one unique value for all quantities, then we can just randomly generate some quantities.
Yeah, no, I think that would make sense. That demo data that you were looking at, that's exactly what we would do if we were to create this. For the random quantities, you know, I think that's the only real roadblock to generating this data set. And the biggest issue, which seems trivial, is it just by business logic, it can't go below zero. So those random numbers, you just need to massage it a little bit so it doesn't go below zero.
And okay. You could
use your random range to get closer than none.
Yeah. Okay. So what we'll do, tomorrow, Antoinette and I'll be loading the demo data into Druid with the columns that we need, and then we can see if there are any columns. I mean, there are definitely some null columns, and then we can take a look at columns that do have data and see if there's anything in there that needs to be massaged as well to make this better, and then we can go from there.
Okay. And just so we know, are you asking us yet? I mean, you are asking us, but where should we be putting our priority in terms of generating this data or getting you access to production data? I mean, is this a blocker? Or?
I mean, I would say it's a blocker for us to have meaningful discussions around how the data is visualized. I think we can continue our discussions of specifications. And we can definitely continue our work on data ingestion just like from your server and building with NiFi. But when we want to really look at visualization, I see it as a main blocker for visualizations. Otherwise, simply knowing the data elements is sufficient for building our pipeline and making sure that's running, as well as building our metric specifications. My preference is to start validating and looking at reports sooner rather than later. And so, if we could have some more valuable graphs by the next showcase, that would be ideal, especially given that we've got the holiday period coming up as well. You know, then we'll find ourselves in January and we haven't looked at any graphs yet. So I think, my preference would be if by our next showcase, which, I guess as an aside, I'm assuming we're having on the 18th, although I'm not sure. My preference would be if we could get it sooner rather than later. So prioritize it, by the next showcase. I think some scheduling and logistics come into play with that as well.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that idea. I would also propose, in terms of scheduling, at the end of today's showcase, we can just confirm what our next one is and kind of confirm the holiday calendar. But in terms of what we do next on this demo data, it sounds to me like, because this is Clay's important for the visualization part, I think maybe our team should probably, with chunks of NVIDIA perhaps helping about making some of the maybe our strategy should first come up with just randomized data that doesn't go below zero, but otherwise random. But then Chungsun could work with NVIDIA's help to start to like massage it a bit into where it's less random and it has an actual pattern to it, of like a scenario of like, oh, this is a small facility, but then they started running out of stock when more children showed up or something. You know, with a bit of NVIDIA's help, we could make people who could help us do that, so that we, by the time we're like 2 weeks from now, Clay, have data in our demo data set that's more realistic.
I think that sounds good. Good from my end.
Cool. And I know Chungsun is still out sick today. He's been out sick a couple days. I mean, so I don't know when this week I'll get to connect with him and maybe talk with him about this idea. But I think he's the last one who worked on our vaccine demo data, and he's a good person then to pick up off a more lead.
I lost you a bit there at the end. Who is that?
Chungsun. Yep.
Great.
Okay, so I think cool. We've covered maybe topics 1 and 2, Clay, we've covered.
Yep. And this one should be, well, the facility geozone poll should be a quick one. Josh, I'm just really saying this to let you know that I've heard you. But what we'll do is, well, I want to maybe let's confirm that I've heard you, but we'll pull the list of facilities and geozones from reference data. Right now, what we'll do is every time we pull for stock cards, we'll pull for reference data. That'll be easier from our end. What we'll look to do is to cache that reference data on a daily or weekly, you know, we can have a discussion about whatever is appropriate, but on a periodic basis, not every time we query. You know, we can try to do that long term, but we need to circle back with Peter and talk through that before we say, you know, just for sure that's the way we'll be handling it. I guess any questions on that?
No, are there questions around the structure, the hierarchy of geozones to facilities?
You broke up a little bit there, but I think you're asking if I just understand the hierarchy from facilities to geozones. Is that right?
That's correct.
Yeah, so I mean, the way I understand it is you have one or many facilities that could be in a district, and then one or many districts that could be in a region, one or many regions that could be in a country. And is it that you always have each of those geozones, or might you have different labels for those geozones? I guess that's somewhere you could help me understand better.
Yeah, so those geozones, right? Facilities don't have any hierarchy to them. So the geozones have hierarchy. And the geozones, each one you'll see has a parent. And at the top of that tree is a root, you know, geozone, which doesn't have a parent. So facilities are at the bottom of that tree and associated with geozones, which have parents, but where other geozones don't reference that geozone as a parent. So at the very bottom of the tree is where the geozones exist that are the only ones that should have facilities attached to them. And that one that you found that I created a bug for is a bug in our demo data.
Okay.
And then the way that you understand the zone, a region or a district or what the labeling in the country, that is where each geozone has a geo level, a geographic level. And that is just a very basic value type that says region, district, country, whatever it is, you know, province.
And that's totally configurable. It's different in every country, the names of those levels. So Clay, like names, province, district, zone, township, in the reporting UI where people may be like filtering or...
Yeah. So it's geozones, but it's something that is sort of variable from instance to instance. So it's like, Josh, what you were saying about receipts, where the reasons for receipts can vary from instance to instance. That's going to be something that each deployment of this is going to have to configure on their own to make sense for their, you know, configuration of OpenLMIS.
Correct.
Cool. Cool. I think that does it for me on geozones. Any closing thoughts before we move on to the supported programs?
No, that's great.
Cool. So I was asking you, Josh, in our JIRA ticket here, which one was it? Yeah. So we were talking about, I think it was this one, but we were talking about how to tell which, I was trying to get it away at which facilities or what the list of supported programs are for a facility and see if we could get at that from stock card data. That's why I was asking, is there always one, at least one stock card per program? Because we were thinking what we would do is say for each stock card for a facility, take all the program IDs that exist, and that is the list of supported programs. But because there isn't necessarily a stock card for each program that a facility supports, you could have a case like this, what we have in my table here, where you essentially have five stock cards that span, you know, programs 10, 20, 30, but program 40 could also apply to a facility and it would be a supported program, but there could be no stock card for it. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, cool. So do we ever need to report on either of our metrics for all programs supported by a particular facility? My hunch is probably, but I want to confirm that.
Could you describe what that would look like?
So show me the full stock availability for... Well, actually, now that you asked me that question, so let's say if I say, show me the full stock availability for all supported programs. Okay, yeah, okay, this still makes sense to me. So show me the full stock availability for a particular facility. Let's just use this table as an example for facility one. If for program 10, 20, and 30, I did have full stock availability, but for program 40, presumably because I have no stock card, I do not have full availability for program 40. You know, that's something we would want to see in reporting. Is that right? Like, is the absence of a stock card an indicator of the absence of stock?
Because I think so, because if there is no stock card, that means there was never an instance of any stock at that facility, because we create a stock card with a stock event. So that means if in an there never been that product at, like, no event has ever happened, I don't think it's necessary to see anything. It wouldn't be like no stock availability there, because according to OpenLMS, that stock has never been there, ever. Like, no, okay. So I think that would be misleading, because maybe that one hasn't been rolled out there yet. I mean, if the user is like, there should be stock there, or I need to be seeing something, then they would want to call and say, you know, like, it would be a root cause analysis thing. I think it would be a false positive to show that.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, okay, cool. I agree. The only other point that I'd like to make is, if you replace the word programs with products, do you ever need to report on full stock availability for all products supported by facility X? In the case of vaccines, that actually is something that happens where for a set of, say, tracer vaccines, where out of 8 vaccines, the country decides, I really need to know if 3 vaccines are in stock all the time, then they can ask for full stock availability to be reported for those 3 tracer vaccines combined.
And that may be a different question than this question about if you have no data, if you're totally missing stock cards. But Vidya, I do agree that sometimes people will want to ask that question of, based on some tracers, tell me my indicator.
But I think the thing to tease out of what Vidya just said is, and maybe we just put this as a placeholder, Clay, for another time, is I want the ability to to group the full stock, the indicator full stock availability by multiple products. So I want to like see, are you saying, I want to see full stock availability of three products as one product video, or are you saying I want to just see three products?
No, combined. So for instance, I want to know is facility one, does facility one have full stock availability for my country's tracer vaccines?
In which case it's
I think that's what we've defined so far, because we've said it for vaccines, which is all vaccines in the program. All we're adding to this is that if we don't have any data about that product and yet it's in some list that the facility should have, then we shouldn't say that they don't have full stock availability, not because they don't have stock, because we don't actually know that they do or don't have stock. They've never told us. It's an absence of data, not data that says we don't have stock.
Correct.
So that's a different indicator.
Yeah, Clay, I mean, that issue of what to do with those facilities that have no stock cards or have some products with no cards is separate from this indicator. We may want like some way to view a list of non-reporting facilities or no data facilities where you can like color code them gray and see them on a list and see, oh, I have, you know, 20 facilities where I somehow have no data at all and know nothing about them. We may want some way in our reporting dashboard to see that list of those no data facilities. I think that's outside of the scope of this indicator. I think we would work on that later. And so I don't want to, add that to the current, you know, FSA visualization, but it's something to keep in mind about what to do when facilities have no data.
Great. No, this sounds good. This is all making sense to me as well. So thank you. Okay, cool. Let's see. So yeah, next, I guess any closing thoughts on that before we move on to discussion of the product model? Okay.
The only question.
Go ahead.
Well, all I was going to say is about that API stuff. So I think you're going down a good path here. The API, you know, the changing of the API, I think it's something to note, but I like this better than what I was going down on that thread. So this is good.
Oh, okay. Cool. Good. Okay. So for our discussion of the product model, and Josh and I are having some back and forth on this in Jira, and we just wanted to talk about it on the phone together. So the way I understand it, and I will definitely need some help filling in gaps here, but my understanding is that we have programs, and within that program, you can look up a certain orderable by either commodity type, which is like a generic class, e.g. ibuprofen, and I took this from your wiki, or a trade item, which is a more specific class of drug like Advil, right? So it's that an orderable can either be looked up by a commodity type or by a trade item, and ultimately all of those roll up to a program. So we would want to group by trade item, by commodity type, by how do these play into groupings or I mean, what, how do we need to be handling these?
Okay.
So is that understanding accurate?
I think, I mean, that's a way we tend to not look at, like it's a little bit different way of stating what we generally say. I think it's an accurate way to say it. There is a little bit of detail and is around the relationship between trade item and commodity type. So you know, trade items are things that are, you know, in another organization, GS1, defined, and you basically just copy that from them. Same thing with commodity types. This is a concept that's out there that we've copied into our system. to make OpenLMIS work, we created this concept of orderable. So this is our own concept. And when we talk about orderables, like you said, we want to create those things off of trade items and commodity types. That's our ideal path. It is possible to create an orderable that is not created from a commodity type or trade item. And in fact, in countries that are just starting down this traceability and visibility path, that's usually where they start because that's what they've had historically. So that's one thing to note. And then the next thing is going to move into the relationship between trade items and commodities. But before I get there, does that make sense, what I just said?
Yeah, it does. I mean, we want to create orderables off of these categorizations, but we don't always. And in some of our more fledgling programs, that it's in fact where we're at.
Right. Okay. So the relationship between trade items and commodity types is that a trade item is supposed to be something that someone manufactures or a brand owner owns. Right, so it's something like the brand name Advil or the brand name Advil or Motrin, and both of those things are trade items. Commodity types are the general classifications, that are put out by organizations like the WHO or some standardization body, and so they identify things, and this can be really varied. It could be anything from drill bits to pharmaceuticals, depending on your system. But these are the general concepts where in a pharmaceutical system, they'll say, this is ibuprofen. This other thing is this vaccine, et cetera. And the relationship between these is when you're looking in orderables, there is this field that's called identifiers. And I believe in demo data, you'll see these identifiers in orderables for the vaccine products. So we made an effort to actually make these, some of the commodity types based off UNSPSC and some of the trade items based off of actual manufactured goods. I think we did that. When you look in orderables, you'll see identifiers. And those identifiers will say, I was created off of a trade item or I was created off of a commodity type. Once you know that and you look at that trade item, the trade item itself should say, I am of a commodity type. And that's important because what that is saying is that the manufacturer, such as Advil, is saying in the UNSPSC system, there is this other identifier called ibuprofen. And when I sell my market space, Advil is for ibuprofen. Okay. And so you need to look at identifiers in first the orderable, because everything works in orderables, but then to understand what's the relationship between trade item and commodity type is to say, well, if my orderable is a trade item, if it was created off of a trade item, I have to go look in the trade item and I have to say, what commodity type is it? And that could be multiple that it, falls under. It could be one in the classification system UNSPSC, it could be another identifier in GPC, et cetera. If the orderable is backed by a commodity, then you would go and you would see, there's a hierarchy to that commodity type. And so in reporting, you might see that in UNSPSC, is the 6 or 7 8 number, the 1 2 3 4 5 6 8, and NSPSC, you'd see that commodity type has a parent, and in our a similar thing, commodity types can have parents. So up one in UNSPSC, and it would say, well, ibuprofen is a pharmaceutical as opposed to a vaccine. And you go up one from IV from a pharmaceutical and you would get to like medical something or other. And it would, it goes up 3 or 4 levels and then the levels depend on the system and all of that's not really important. But if someone were to ask you, everything about IV, you know, when I want to report on full stock availability of ibuprofen, well, you'd have an orderable for our ibuprofen. You track that back down to a commodity type, and then your stock cards, which are all orderables as well, and say, well, which ones of these are orderables for trade items in that commodity type? And that was a lot of information that I just threw at you.
I think I got the gist of it, yeah.
Okay.
I'll try to regurgitate this so we can, you know, make sure that we're on a shared understanding here. But an orderable can map to either a trade item or a commodity type. If it maps to a trade item, then that trade item will map to a commodity type. And once it gets, and a commodity type can then map up to other commodity types. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Yeah, and I should caveat that an orderable doesn't always do this, but we try to have them do this. So it sounds like this is variable, right? It's not that we always have, or maybe I'm wrong, but you know, it sounds like can one commodity type sometimes map up to another commodity type and the same commodity type? And let me start back. Is this something that's configured by each deployment of OpenLMIS, what that hierarchy is? And if so, we would just capture it as an input like we would for receipt reasons or whatever the other one we caught earlier today was?
Yes, the short answer is yes. The little bit longer answer is that there's standardization bodies and manufacturers, and they all collectively define this thing. So in future versions of OpenLMIS, we would like to ship a version of UNSPSE.
Okay.
United Nations supply product code, like that classification.
Yeah, we can send you a link again for that classification, just so I find it helpful to actually look at it to wrap your head around what we're saying when we say UNSPSC. So there are links.
But Clay's right that it is configurable by different OpenLMIS implementers. And so it is, we kind of treat it like an input, just like the geographic zones or whatever, treat that as an input to the reporting. And I don't know, we may want to, like, for a first version, Clay, of this FSA indicator, just build it off of what's in the demo data now, the way we have the vaccine products set up. And I don't even know right now if they happen to be trade items or commodity types. I haven't looked inside to see, but you know, it might be that we just get this indicator up and running right now with the demo data the way it is, but then we'll need to come back to how to make it more configurable so that if other implementers have set up their classifications differently, that the report will still run.
Right. Yeah, I think we'll definitely, yeah, I think building it off of what we have in the demo data for now, and then we'll just be cognizant of, you know, this is just one bit of configuration that each implementation will go through. I think we've captured three of those now. Unfortunately, it's pretty straightforward. You're just like typing in a list of reasons or, you know, whatever the columns are going to be. But I think we'll need to capture these as inputs.
Okay.
Cool.
Okay, and I think
go ahead.
So I think that hopefully that most of your questions, you get sense of it. It sounds like
it does. Yeah, no, that gives me a much better understanding of how these fields relate to each other and how we would use them in reporting. You're right. It is a little more complicated than just saying group by some field, because there's kind of a cascading nature to the way they relate to each other.
Yeah, and I hope it's starting to become clear too, when you're looking at stock cards, right? Stock cards are for an orderable, and that could mean a whole bunch of different things. It could be, you know, that orderable could be for a commodity type. It could be for a
a trade item. You could be asking report about a commodity type, and there's many different orderables that are your stock cards, which are, you know, are for that commodity type, meaning they're trade items. So you have, I think, a good foundation for all of that. And then the last thing to put in is, well, if that orderable is a trade item, you know, in vaccines, we're going to be interested in lots. And so you could have multiple stock cards or even the same orderable, because one stock card is for lot A and the other's for lot B, you know, and so on. And so it's when you're asking about these indicators in total, you have to put all of those different stock cards and their different line items together, or you have to, you know, not aggregate them, you know, et cetera.
Are there other ways of slicing trade items or commodities other than by lot, orderable, trade item, commodity, or some, you know, some subgrouping of the commodity type?
Well, I think it's stock cards are in programs, and then yeah, you get into what you just said. There's commodity types. There are the trade items and the lots. In the future, I mean, we've talked about having bin cards. We don't have them today, but it's possible that in the future we could have those. And bin cards, if you haven't heard that term before, the differentiating factor is that a bin card would have something like a shelf location on it. You know, so it's on shelf 5, you know, or it's in rack 5, shelf 4, or something like that.
Sure.
For bigger work.
Okay, cool. No, thanks. This clarifies a lot. What we'll do tomorrow, Antoinette and I will review some of the links you've sent, review these notes, and we'll try to extract each of these fields, and we'll come to you with any questions we have about what the best way to maybe get at this data from the stock card itself might be. For the interest of time, I just want to get to our last item here, and this one should be pretty quick, for our denominator for closed vial wastage. And then we can talk about scheduling here at the end of the call. So I'll start with the second half that I have here. The sum of the quantity for all receipts. Just want to know how we identify it's a receipt, because we have sort of three different there's a reason type, reason category, and reason name that we're using to determine whether an adjustment was closed by a wastage. So that would be a debit adjustment of the reason name, expiration, broken, heat, you know, et cetera. Is this how we would identify a receipt? I know you noted, Josh, you said the reason was configurable. Is it that the name is configurable, but the type and category would be a credit and adjustment respectively?
So to reiterate, to convey what Brandon and I briefly discussed, I think this was last week, we were discussing this as well. So this is definitely something that's configurable. And the issue is that in our configuration, there's no way to say one of these things is a receipt. In demo data right now, we only have one reason that is a receipt. It's called transfer in. But there isn't a semantic way to say this one's the receipt. There could be other reasons that are in our configuration in the future. You know, you could add them, which technically would not be receipts, you know, et cetera. So where Brandon and I got to is, in our configuration, we didn't think that it was, you know, we think that trees are going to have a lot of different ways of slicing and dicing these receipts. And we didn't think that it was a good way to go about adding to our data model each one of these different fields. The best solution we could think of that we don't have implemented at the moment is to go along some sort of tagging, approach, so that people could add, you know, a user could add as they wanted a tag to one of these reasons and say, you know, this reason is a receipt. And they could say whatever they wanted, you know, add whatever tag they wanted. And then in the reporting, we thought, well, this is a way that now you could say, when I build my indicator, I want to say, you know, I want to include these different reasons. And it's, you know, the ones that are tagged this way. So that, yeah, I guess that's just a summary of what we were thinking, not necessarily what we have implemented.
Sure. I think, yeah, I mean, in reporting in, just looking at that tag would certainly be easier. And what we can do for now is just, with our build, you know, being demo data, we'll just look at this transfer in reason. And, you know, we can just flag this as another, for now, until we get that tagging feature built out, we can just flag this as another input that will kind of depend upon how that particular deployment of OpenLMIS defines receipts.
Yeah, I'd like that. For now, you could go off of transfer and hard code it. And in the future, hope to have a way of tagging.
Great. So we made it with 3 minutes to spare. I think this was a really productive call. So thanks for your time, everyone. And unless if there are any closing thoughts, let's talk about scheduling and holiday outages.
Yeah, let's do that. And the other thing, Clay, that I'll do really quick is just put the...
thank you.
The sort of sprint board up just to give people the higher level picture of what has happened this sprint. There were a couple of tickets that got done. I know today we didn't specifically drill in and look at those much. That's okay. But yeah, you have a lot of specific tickets about these indicators we talked about in progress. So
sorry. Go ahead. I was just going to say we covered each of these tickets through our talking points.
Yeah, I think that's fine. I know today was maybe a lot more about questions than just about showcasing, and we can, anyway, after the holidays, we maybe can talk more about if we should have other meetings other than just sort of our this showcase every 2 weeks. But first, let's talk schedule to get through the holidays. Our next one of these meetings will be, the normal calendar would be in 2 weeks from today's time, and that would fall, like you had said, on December the 19th, which is a Tuesday. Do I have that right?
Yeah.
Okay, great. And so I think we should go ahead and have that meeting on the 19th. That's far enough before kind of most people's holidays that I think it's okay to go ahead and have that one. And then... the one after that would be January 2, which officially is a working day for us again in Village Reach, Seattle. So even though there might not have been a ton of work done in between the 19th of December and the 2nd of January, we could have short meetings if there's not a lot to share. And meet on the 19th of December and the 2nd of January. But here for Clay, you and the others involved on the team, does all of that make sense for your holiday schedules and work calendars and travels?
Yeah. So, Antoinette, I'm not seeing your. When are you taking time off for the holidays?
I will not be taking time off. So I'm available the whole time.
Oh, okay. Okay.
We want to make sure you get some good time off too, but okay.
No, we have to take leave days off, and I didn't want to take some time off, so I'm available to work.
Yeah, I will be available for most of that as well. I might take a couple days to do that long weekend of scuba diving I mentioned at the beginning of our call. But I don't think that would significantly impact our timelines here. It would just be at, you know, 2 days or so. So I think what you articulated, Brandon, sounds good. Let's leave it for the 19th. Let's cancel. I think maybe canceling the 2nd and pushing it back a little bit might give us some time, just because there will still be some slowness as our office will be closed. Although we'll still be working, we'll be at home. So maybe canceling the second and having like a debrief meeting on the 5th, or maybe early the week of the 8th, so that we could have a strong showcase on the 16th.
Yeah, we could. So instead of meeting on the 2nd of January, we could meet on like the 5th. That would be your Friday evening if people really want to do that. I don't know if your weekend.
Good point. The
8th. Go ahead.
While Anthony will be and I will be working, you know, until the 2nd or like, you know, throughout the holiday. I mean, with y'all being out for a week, it could be that if y'all are out the week of the 25th and then through the New Year holiday, like, it could be that we just have a week where, you know, we're not able to make all that much progress. So my thinking was if we move it back just a little bit in that week, maybe let's do the 4th. It's not an evening. Thank you for reminding me of that. I think that would be my preference, just so that we don't find ourselves coming back the day after a holiday where it's like, you know, not all that much happened if there are things that we're looking to you for.
Okay, yeah. I will move that on our calendars to the 4th. So we would do a report showcase. And again, it would be shorter or less formal because, yeah, everybody will have just gathered back from the holidays. But in case you have things to show or questions for us to discuss, we'll meet the 4th of January for that at the same time slot. So I'll set that up on the Outlook invite.
Great.
Okay. Then I think that's everything. Does anybody have other things to share or mention before we adjourn?
No, it sounds great. Look forward to visualizing and getting that mock data to you.
That makes at least two of us. Great. All right. Well, thanks, everybody. Nice talking with y'all. Have a good rest of your time in DC and safe travels home. And we will talk in a couple weeks.
All right. Thanks. Have a good time as well there. And we'll see you soon.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks.